favorite comedian, Anthony Rogers, live in his tour bus. Yeah. But also, you need to get a beard like this. People have been talking. They said your shit looks whack. It looks weird. They can't tell your pronouns. You need to get a beard like this right now. And the only way to do that is by using Luxurious Bastard Beard Oil. Great smell, great function, great everything. Just get this. And there's directions on how to use it if you know how to read. But use the link in the description. Go to the website. Use promo code LEGENDARY. Get a discount. Do it. Thank you. Boom.
At Revolution Coffee Company, we are dedicated to giving you the best cup of coffee you have ever had while supporting those who keep us safe. We roast our coffee daily, and we offer same-day shipping. Our coffee never sits in a warehouse or a shelf getting stale. Our prices beat our competition, and our coffee speaks for itself. Check us out at Revolution Coffee Company.
Welcome back to the greatest show in the entire universe. Today we have a legendary guest. A lot of good bands. I probably listened to this dude's music for like, I don't know, 20 years or more now, probably at this point, or maybe more actually, like 98 to now, I guess. It's crazy. Ryan Schock from several bands, Julian K, DMO, Dead by Sunrise, Orgy. How you doing, brother? Fuck, sorry, bro. How you doing?
Good. Great. Great to be here. How awesome. Are you?
Good, man. You're an absolute legend, by the way. I don't know if you knew that about yourself.
Thank you.
No problem, man.
I don't think it about myself when I was just changing my daughter's poopy diaper.
Yeah, you sounded busy, bro. Like, you definitely sound like you suddenly got a lot going on, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, I just had a new baby, and she just turned 11 months today. And when I'm not touring, because I work a lot. I mean, a lot. I have businesses here in California. I'm actually only in one band now because my tenure in Edema has ended. But I was in two bands, leading them, running the businesses, being the lead singer, writing, producing, all kind of shit. And then you add a baby on top. So when I'm home, because I don't have a normal job, my partner does, I end up being full-time worker, childcare, 17 hour days. It's nuts, but I'm super grateful that I get to be around for my daughter. It's pretty awesome.
No, it is awesome. Your kid's adorable. I've seen pictures and stuff, man. That's the exciting part of life. I'm trying to get to that point. I'm not there yet, but no, man, you've accomplished about five American dreams, you know? So you gotta save some for some other people, you know, like,
it feels like a fucking constant fist fight. Honestly, it just feels like, I've always been clawing at trying to get, I don't know what it is, you know, some level of stability. But I remember when I used to watch Arsenio Hall and David Letterman on my little tube TV with antennas at home in Taft, California, which is a really small town outside of Bakersfield, which is another shitty town. I mean, like the shittier than shitty town.
I've been to Bakersfield, I agree.
No. Yeah, they make fun of me in Bakersfield. And I'm in there. And I remember seeing David Letterman and Arsenio Hall, and I saw Megadeth on Arsenio Hall, and I was fucking floored. I'm all, fucking Megadeth is on Arsenio Hall, and I'm just rocking out in my bedroom at like 11, whenever it was on. It was late. I was young. Wow. And I thought to myself, if I was ever on these shows, I'm done. I've made it. You know, it's awesome. I was never on Arsenio Hall, but I was on Letterman. I was on Conan O'Brien. I was on all the shows that I watched, and Kimmel, all that kind of stuff. And it's so funny. You're so not done and you're so not set. It's just kind of comedy. I always think about that as, to kind of like the relative gauge of like when you think you've made it or whatever. You never
thought it. You make me want to ask them before I get to the like some questions I had. Like, what have you had that moment, like that I made it moment? And what was that? If there was one moment that you're like, I don't have to work at a gas station or whatever terminology, you know, I'm not, no disrespect to that. I'm just saying, like, I'm not gonna have to work a normal 9-to-5, more or less, what I'm trying to say. And like, I made it in like entertainment or art or whatever terminology. Was there like a moment like that for you?
Yeah, that moment when we were on Conan O'Brien.
Which band?
Orgy. Oh, wow. I was on Kimmel and Letterman and Dead by Sunrise, and I was on O'Brien and Orgy and a lot of different shows in Orgy. But when I looked over at Andy Richter and he's like, how do you feel? And I'm fucking nervous. And he goes, oh man, it's just a talk show. you know, just relax. And I'm like, okay. And then we fucking just break it down. And we were on there a couple times. So we kind of like, we're friendly with them and everything. And I remember just being up there going like, well, this literally going like, this is what I dreamed of. And fuck, I feel like we're still fighting. We're still trying to like, you know, accomplish something big and all this kind of stuff. But it's just kind of wild the way that happens. But there's been multiple times, even recently, during COVID, after I got sober and all this kind of stuff, I really, you know, all my restaurants were closed. My bands weren't able to tour. I got sober. I was kind of in a weird place. But then as I started getting okay with all of that, I really started realizing, I was like, well, I'm doing music. I love doing music. I love doing all this other business stuff. But I'm like, but, you know, everything, all this shit's gone down and I'm still okay. And I was kind of thinking to myself, I was like, am I retired? Kind of. I'm old, you know, and I'm like, am I fucking kind of like living this weird life where I really kind of almost don't need to work? And I think I've kind of gone in and out of those periods. But the reality of it is I just keep working more and getting more and more, trying to focus more and more on that elusive thing that you want to accomplish, which is that ultimate record and writing the best fucking song that breaks the universe and becoming a better singer and trying to become a better person and a better leader and a better, you know, business person. And just, you know, I don't know, just always trying to be better. Always.
I think it's probably what gets guys like you there is that it's never enough. And Nick from Rumble is telling me that Giving In's gotten through so many workouts, absolute masterpiece.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's my favorite song that Adema has done. It's
Really? Okay.
Yeah. It's a pleasure to sing on stage. Really, really enjoyed it. And yeah, I love that song. It's fantastic.
That's awesome. Yeah. Look, let's start from the beginning there. So you were in like Sex Art with Jonathan Davis originally. Was that the first project you ever did?
Yeah. I was in beauty college.
Was that before that?
Yeah, no, that was during it.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just out of high school or maybe even around like high school age. And I went to beauty. I was going to become a hairdresser because I wanted to play music and I wanted a job that would allow me to have the freedom to, you know, I didn't want a boss. I wanted to be my own boss. And I was into fashion and design and art and all this kind of stuff. And it just like hairdresser became kind of like, I'm like, well, that hits all the fucking, you know, I'm not necessarily into hair, but I'm into design and fashion and creating a look. And all this served me well in Orgy and all the other projects that I did after that. But
that makes a lot of sense. I didn't know that about you, but that makes a lot of sense. Like just, I mean, you always have a cool hairstyle and it's kind of like a confidence thing too. I mean, I think a lot of people in that situation, it's like a confidence conversation kind of thing too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it teaches you a lot about how to kind of lead really quickly and connect with people really quickly, which is all good things for a singer. I mean, when someone sits down in your chair and within about a minute or two, you have to have a connection with them and understand what they're saying and make them feel comfortable. That served me really, really well as especially like Orgy's rise was meteoric. I mean, it was like nothing and it went like that. Well, all of a sudden the power dynamic shifted vastly between us and everyone that was around us. And I've learned that the people that had that skill set to make people feel comfortable and not exert your power over people and stuff like that, you keep yourself this kind of like a humble mentality and everything, really has 25 years later has come back and rewarded me in oodles because people that I have needed now have come up to me and helped me out saying, I remember when I was a kid and you were, you know, in Orgy at its peak and we met you and everyone was kind of, you know, what I'm not saying anything about the guys in Orgy or anything, same. Everyone there was, it was scary for them. You came up to me and put your arm around me and said, hey, just, you know, be cool. Like we're just normal people. Like I'm just a normal guy. Like what do you want to do with me? Let's do something fun. And that I didn't realize it at the time, but that's come back now as everyone's an adult and people have really like been there for me. So I credit that to being a hairdresser and being humble and serving people and all that kind of stuff.
That was that's actually how I found out about your original name is Orgy. Cause like I was a big Orgy fan when I was a kid, man. Like I was like, I was probably like seventh, eighth grade when you guys came out. And that was just a nuts band. I think I've told you this before, but I think that band was about 30 years ahead of its time. And I mean that in a complimentary way. I mean, it did well in its time. I get that. But I'm saying like like it did amazing at this time. I'm saying like, but that like now everybody's trying to do that sound almost like the EDM scene, all that stuff. Like you guys were like astronauts to me as a kid. Like I just remember like seeing this. I'm just like it was just some bigger than life kind of thing. And I love that whole like Family Values tour '98, man. Like that whole thing was like you were part of some magic stuff right there, man. That's like my generation's Woodstock or something, you know. It's like that, like the, I mean, but it's a tour instead of just one show, you know.
The genius of Korn. I mean, credit to the warlords, man. I mean, Korn is my
they're still killing it.
They're my North Star, yeah. And you will never find someone that has more good things to say about those guys, what they've done for my career, the friendships that have been there for 30 years. I mean, Jonathan has been my friend now. He's one of my, he's probably my oldest still engaged friendship. He's my longest friend, Jonathan Davis. And I'm not so like disconnected that I don't understand who that is. I understand Jonathan's the fucking rock god, but he's still my friend who's been sweet to me for 30 years and signed my band Orgy. I was my first band with Jonathan. Jonathan was the first time I heard someone that was truly great. You know, when you kind of hear someone and you're like, whoa, you know, and it just kind of takes your breath away. That's what Jonathan's voice is like. And
that whole scene, man, you guys, Limp Bizkit, Korn, all that. There was nothing better than being a kid listening to that stuff, man. It was like, you guys were like my Rolling Stones, you know, like when my parents talk about the Rolling Stones or the Beatles or something, you know, it's like those bands, like, I mean, like I'd say like you guys, Limp Bizkit, Korn, those are the three bands that just like, were like huge to me as a kid. I mean, just from like being, I'm talking from a consumer standpoint as a child, like I was just like, that was like legendary to me, bro. Like I remember the same feeling, waiting in line for your guys' albums and stuff. Like I think I waited in line for Candy Ass, you guys were just, I mean, you guys did a couple great albums, to be honest though. I mean,
thank you. And I remember those when those albums came out, and I remember doing the big lines and the going and doing the signings. And you know, we did some in LA and in New York and some different cities. And I just remember doing the one, and I think it was in New York, and we signed into the like insanely late night, and the line wasn't ending and they had to stop it. And we were just like, no, we'll sign till 4 a.m. You know, this is like pretty important to all these people here. And they like literally had to shut it down. And then it happened in LA as well.
Wow.
And I was just like, I couldn't believe that there could be that many people on Sunset Boulevard and in Times Square that gave a shit about what we were doing, you know. And it definitely hit me. I was like, you know, we better not sleep tonight. We better fucking stay here and do this. But you know, police, label, record store, Tower Records at the time, and God, I love that place when that was rocking.
It's magic, yeah.
You know, they had to shut it down, and that's when I realized something insane was happening. You know, something that was beyond my control, something that was much bigger than what we had ever thought could happen, because we did set out to be astronauts. You know, we didn't really set out to be liked. And in fact, when we first did what we did, a lot of bands made fun of us. A lot of bands didn't get us. A lot of our friends made fun of us. They thought our guitar sounded stupid. They thought that the vocals sounded like kind of like fake, like, oh, what's this like British accent and stuff. And it wasn't that we were trying to have a British accent or anything like that. We were trying to make the vocals sound different. We were trying to make everything about the music different. And, you know, at that time, we knew that Korn was the fucking supreme overlord. You know, they were dominating music. And every band almost sounded like they were related to Korn.
Yeah, yeah.
And I am fucking related to Korn. You know what I mean? Like no one's more a child of the Korn than I am. And I knew that we had to kind of make cause an explosion. We had to do something very weird.
I think that's why you stood out. Yeah. I think that's why you stood out, because you weren't that rap metal thing. Which is still good at the time. I love it still. But you were something completely different in that mix. And sorry, I get hyped up. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. And we could play with all those bands. Like we were still nu metal.
It's awesome.
But modern, but in another way, like you said, much further out there. And yeah, it really, really worked. And it became, you know, a sound of the era, but still sounds modern now, which is wild. I did an online listening party all over the world. I was asked to do this. Really, I didn't think of it, but I forget what podcast it was, but they had people on the screen all over the fucking world. And we listened to Candy Ass front to back with me.
That was a great album, bro.
Oh, man. I forgot. And, you know, it blew me out of the water that people that didn't speak English were singing the words. And because I hadn't ever sat like that, like you can nowadays. There was no Zoom. There was no fucking podcast. There was no, you know, and this was like I was sitting in a room with, you know, a couple of hundred people from around the world that were just like espousing how much this meant to them. And I was just it kind of woke me up, you know, because I get a little detached from our own music and a little bit like I forget that it's special.
You know? A lot of rock stars are like that, bro. A lot of rock stars don't know how crazy of an impact they've had on people's lives. I noticed that a lot, man. It's cool that you can be that humble and like separate yourself from that. We're not like one of those guys just on your own dick the whole time. Like, yeah, I'm the best, bro. You know, I love the humbleness and stuff. And kind of a simpler question, like what was Beyond TRL like, man? Because that was like, I mean, that's like the Ed Sullivan of my generation. You know, it's like what was that like?
Dude, it was insane because I watched TRL all the time, and here I am with Carson Daly. Well, what happened was we played. Do you remember Fashionably Loud?
Yeah, I do actually.
On the beach and MTV, and
yeah,
somehow cool. We got that, and because we got that, that we had to leave. I think we had to leave Family Values. What did we have to do and go shoot that? And we shot it with Kid Rock and Jay-Z before any of us broke. It was.
I remember that actually now.
Yes. And we played on the beach with all these models. And of course, our dream, we're like, fuck yeah. And we're like, who's this Kid Rock guy? And who's this Jay-Z guy? They're both super cool. But that's how we became friends with Jay-Z and Kid Rock, because we fucking were all just kind of like schlepping it at this fucking thing. And it was our first MTV thing. And there's all these models everywhere. We're just like, fuck, this is great. This being a rock star thing is cool, but we weren't rock stars yet. And so we did our thing and blew that fucking place down. And MTV was so impressed. They were like, hey, have the guys fly to New York. We're going to have them in the studio and let's see how it goes. So we went to New York, and I didn't know that this is how it works. And so we went to MTV and we did a whole day of press, and we were with our, you know, Warner Brothers is big enough that they have like a fucking MTV person, right? Who is still our friends to this day. Her name's Wendy. Awesome. Old friend. And we do a whole day of press. And at the end of the day, they fucking, we went up to like the top of the building and we were hanging out there. And Wendy was like, okay, hold on, this is a big deal. And I'm like, what the fuck are we doing? I've been talking to people all day long. I'm so sick of it. Let's go fucking get drunk. And you know, and everything else, there's gotta be girls here. And, because that was, you know, my other side project back then was drinking and partying, but being a lunatic. But we're there, and she's like, no, hold on, this is a big deal. So there was this big like room that was kind of dark, and it was like kind of like their like sort of like conference room hangout, but it was like all kind of hippie and kind of rad. And they were all in there talking. And they came out and they were like, hey, so we decided you guys did so good today. Like, you guys are definitely something different. There's something different going on here. And we're like, okay, well, yeah, you didn't need, thank you. They're like, we're going to make you a buzz clip. And I was like, awesome. What's that? You know? And Wendy was like, oh my God, you know, this is a huge deal. So we left after shaking everyone's hands, and we went downstairs, got in the limo, and she's like, oh my God. And I was like, what? And she goes, you guys are a buzz clip. And I'm like, what does that mean? She goes, you're going to get played 4 times a day, every day.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh, that's a lot. She goes, that's ridiculous. She's like, it's on. So I'm getting chills. It's kind of weird because the way I felt. And so we became a buzz clip. And as soon as people saw what it is we were doing, then all of a sudden, all the misunderstanding, all the being made fun of, and how shitty our guitar sounded and how dumb our vocals were, turned into, holy fuck, we're being voted by viewers. We're crawling up TRL. And then we were number 2 and then number 1. And then we're on TRL. We go to TRL. There's Times Square, and there's the entire Times Square is full. And there's people holding up pictures of me and the band. And I'm still getting chills. And
I do now. That's crazy.
My girlfriend at the time was like, you know, just like we got out of the limo and we were like getting, I mean, we had to have security like clear up. It was like the Beatles. And I was just like, what the fuck is going on? And I thought at first someone else was here. I was like, oh, there's another, the president's in town. I was like, fuck, it's the president's here. He's on MTV. And we go up there and I look down there, and sure enough, and there's video, I think, on YouTube and stuff. And I'm looking out the window, and sure enough, they're fucking holding up us. And I go, are all those people And they're like, oh yeah, Carson's like, yeah, those people are here for you. You guys are like really popular. And I'm like, okay. And Carson's super fucking cool. Like was completely like a friend and made us feel real comfortable. And then we just did like MTV with literally fucking 5,000 people out on the fucking sidewalk.
That's crazy.
Then multiple sold out shows. And then, and you're just like, yeah, it's madness. And so then we would go on MTV a lot because every song we put out became number one on TRL, and we got retired off of TRL because you can only be on there, I think, 86 times or 86 days in a row.
Oh, that's right.
They retire and they make a ceremony out of it. So it's an honor to get retired, but you're also bummed because you're like, fuck, I'm on TV all the time. So yeah, it was a roller coaster. It was super cool. I mean, we're really lucky. We had three, you know, major singles that were number one and
wow, yeah,
retired off of TRL. And I mean, I know a lot of people, if you think back, they think Blue Monday, because that's what broke us. And I get it. Blue Monday is a giant song, but we had other hit songs.
Thank Stitches you. Is my favorite, probably.
Yeah. Stitches was a huge hit song. And it was
probably my favorite.
Yeah.
That was just such a good song, like lyrically, sound wise, everything. That was just like a perfect song, man. Like, and I mean, that was just such a, I mean, it had a lot of like 80s, like kind of glam to it a little bit. And then a lot of like modern techno, you only really heard in like Europe at the time, really. And like, it was like something completely unheard of for the American market, in my opinion. Like just the way it was created. I mean, I can see where, I mean, you may have taken things from other things. I mean, that's just how the human mind is. But you know, I could be completely wrong. Just kind
of we were listening to Duran Duran. We were listening to, of course, Depeche Mode is a running theme in my life. Definitely New Order. We were listening to, when we were recording the album, we went and saw the Deftones one night and Duran Duran the next night in Sacramento. We were recording up in Lake Tahoe. I mean, it was just, yeah, we were definitely immersing ourselves in, you know, Blondie and Bowie, lots of David Bowie, and really pulling elements from that stuff and adding them into the stew of heavy music that we kind of came from. You know, I mean, I grew up on Depeche Mode and Slayer, you know, The Cure and Metallica. You put that together and what do you get? Orgy.
That's, you know, basically what it felt like. Yeah, and I didn't understand it as a kid. It was just like, you guys were like spacemen. It was all new. It was like, I remember seeing that. I was like, what is this? Yeah. And all, I went from like listening to like old music, like Elvis and like classic rock with my parents and stuff to like, you're getting to middle school and finding your band. I'm like, what is this? I've never heard this sound. And then you couldn't even tell your parents you listened to Orgy because they just flip out. I mean, I was like, what bands you listen to? I'm like, Orgy. Like, I remember being at a restaurant telling them about your band. And like, they like, I didn't even know what the word meant, bro. I'm saying it to like my family at like a restaurant, like a Texas Roadhouse or something. And I'm just like, man, this band Orgy is like really good or something, like a kid version of that. And they're just like, what'd you just say? They couldn't even, like, they're like freaking out about your band name. I remember that. And like your album cover too, or your album name too. I remember like I remember being like a seventh grader, like trying to say candy ass and orgy to like my parents, bro. It's just
like, you know, candy ass is actually a person, and that's where we got the name from. Yeah,
tell me that story. Yeah, tell that. I heard loosely about this.
David or Raquel, or what's the Arquette that does drag and all this kind of stuff? I forget.
She passed away, but I forgot who you're talking about.
Yes, yes. So she was in Hollywood at that time. You know, we're hanging out and we're kind of like, you know, coming up in Hollywood or whatever. We're sort of going to all the parties and doing all the stuff and doing all the drugs and all the drinking and all the partying and all the music and all the shit, right? And and at this point, you know, like this place called Crazy Girls, it's a famous strip club. And you know, girls, that, a lot of that was there. Wow. And that was a place where, I mean, we would go there and other huge bands would be there and we were friends with everybody and all this kind of stuff. So we'd go to all these parties and I forget that Arquette, I didn't know her super well, but we did know her and her friend, it was a drag queen named Candy Ass and saw us walking and we were in these platform shoes and tight black clothes and looking like androids. And she's walking, she sees us, she goes, wait a second. Fucking fierce. Like, totally became our friend. And I think we liked the name so much. We just thought that was so badass of him, her, you know, them. What, I don't know what the fuck you're supposed to say. I don't mean any disrespect. I just don't.
Yeah, we're just trying to figure it out. No, I don't. Yeah,
I just give zero fucks. Yeah. I thought that she was badass. I thought kind of she, but I thought she was awesome. And we just thought that was such a cool name. We obviously were doing gender bending and space meets fucking where the fuck are we, you know, eyeliner, nail polish, you know, tight clothes when everyone was wearing baggy clothes and all this kind of stuff. So we thought it was perfect. And it went along with the whole idea that you basically couldn't tell your mom you're listening to Orgy. And it really worked. Not only is the band name Orgy, the album's called Candy Ass. I mean,
oh, I know. Yeah. It was impossible. And my parents got me into music, so it was impossible to like even tell them that without being reprimanded. Yeah. Just being like, what'd you just say to me? But no, I didn't know that exact story, but I read that story somewhere, like a version of that. It was named after somebody, but, so many bands. Okay. So Dead by Sunrise, what was that's like a super group more so, like how'd that come about more so?
Well, Chester was my best friend, and we met, it's a very long story. I'll try to summarize it, but we met at NRG Studios when Orgy was recording our second album. Linkin Park was called Hybrid Theory, and they were recording their first album in Studio A, and we were in Studio B. So they're just in the same building right next to each other. And I heard this guy walking up and down the hall in the next studio screaming. Like, I'm like, okay, this guy's going to hurt his throat. Like, this is gnarly. And so, and I was kind of like the social butterfly of Orgy. And I would always go bring tidings of alcohol. And so I would just kind of run over, and I'm going in there, I'm going to find this poor kid and put him out of his misery, you know? And I see this skinny fucking, you know, little curly haired fucking kid walking up and down the hallway. And, you know, it's kind of cute. I'm like, oh, wow. And I'm like, hey, dude. And he's a little, hey. And I didn't know this, but we're one of their favorite bands. And he's like, whoa, he's like, the guitar player for Orgy just came over here. We knew they were next. He told me this later. And I go, hey man, I go, is that you screaming? He's all, yeah. And I was like, you should stop that. That's going to hurt. And he's all, no, no, that's why I warm up. And he's all, yeah. And I'm just like, I'm getting chills. I'm like, mother of God, this guy is a demon. You should have a drink with me. Come on out front. And so we come out front and fully fucking bond in one hangout session while both the bands are working, him and I just like this. And at the time, I actually really admired him. He was sleeping in his car because he lived in Arizona, and he was out in LA recording and sleeping in his car to do Linkin Park, to do Hybrid Theory. And that's how hard these guys were going for it. Just like any one of us, you know, when we're coming up. And I was like, well, dude, you could stay with me. You know, and so we were starting to talk, like, I'm like, dude, I have, you know, I'm fucking an Orgy, man. I'm rich, you know, come on down. And I'm like, come on down and stay with me. You're so cool. And I thought he was so cool. I thought that he was so sweet. I thought his voice was just insane.
So you're saying Chester Bennington crashed at your house when he was coming up with Hybrid?
Actually ended up not happening. He ended up kind of another, like his wife had come out, and I think that some other arrangement that I can't remember ended up happening. Like they got a place to stay, but that's how we started bonding.
That's crazy.
Like one day I'm like, hey, just come to my house. And so we were going to do that. And then, but anyways, we're recording for a matter of weeks to get next door to each other.
Wow.
So we're hanging out now every day, and they weren't shit yet. But I went next door and they're like, hey, I want to hear what you guys are doing. And I went back and I listened to what became Hybrid Theory. And I heard this motherfucker, and I heard all of them. And we all know how good Linkin Park is, right? I mean, that's one of the best bands on earth. Well, I heard it and I go, we'll be opening for you soon. And they're laughing. They're like, oh, shut the fuck up. You know, like at this point we had a, you know, multi-platinum album, and right. So we're kind of big dogs, you know.
Were you recording Vapor Transmission at this point?
We were doing Vapor Transmission. Yeah. Okay, and gotcha. You'd already done Candy Ass. So that's all over the radio. You know, I can't even go to a fucking movie theater. Like it's on. I can't go grocery shopping, like blonde fucking hair, eyeliner, fucking nails, the whole fucking thing. Like we're just all looking like full androids 24/7, you know, but crazy, you know, young, nutty. And so I listened to Linkin Park and I was like, okay. And I walked next door to my band, to Orgy, and I go, well, these guys are going to be, this is nuts. They're ridiculous. And everyone's like, oh, wow, that's crazy. So they ended up opening for us actually Disturbed opened for us. It was wild. We did this, you know, shows.
And like, huge, bro. I mean, that's, you guys were like one of the biggest bands. Wild.
I have the poster of this right there. Let me get it. Hold on.
That's awesome, man.
It's so funny. It's so wild.
Wow, dude.
Those that we did, Disturbed, Linkin Park, Vast, and Orgy.
Whoa, that's crazy.
And you know, I don't show you this to think that we're so big or anything. I mean it like how weird, you know. And we had
awesome
wonderful shows together, like incredible shows. We all became really good friends. And I was, by the way, when I saw these guys, all of them, I was like, okay, you guys are the best ever, all of you. Dave Draymond, you're the best singer on earth. Chester, you're the best singer ever. You're all gods. I don't know what you're talking about. But of course, back then we were the gods. So we do these shows together. And I told the guys, you know, hey, you know, Linkin Park was coming up being super cool. Like, wow, you guys, like our last show together, they were just like, holy shit. And Orgy was at the prime. Like we were murdering the stage. I mean, we would just go up there and it was a fucking nuclear blast, you know? I mean, we would just melt the fucking crowd, you know? And it was awesome. And I had my own bar on my side of the stage. So I'm like, you know, I'd drink like a fucking thing of, you know, 46 beers or something like that. And back then you like couldn't even tell, you know, I'm just like, yeah, you know, fucking am awesome, you know, makeup smeared and everything. And we're hell on wheels. And so it was really fun. And we had our last show together and everything. And I was like, by this time, Chester and I were really good friends. And I was like, yeah, man, well, next time we see each other, I bet you we're going to be opening for you because you guys, I could just see what was happening. Like it was, he didn't know it yet. They didn't know it yet. I knew it because it already happened to me. So I can see what was happening with them was more than what I was experiencing. It was beyond, you know, Chester had this thing that was beyond anything I'd ever seen. So, couple months later, we did a big radio show because the radio show circuit, you basically play with the same bands. Like it's Linkin Park, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Hole, Orgy, Deftones, And it's that all fucking year because we all have the songs in the radio. So it's almost like you're doing a tour together, but you're not on tour together. Right. Huh. So it's a weird thing. It was really cool. It's like, it's called radio show season. You know, you go do all every town has like a big radio show in an amphitheater. They all do. They all have a radio station. They also, we would play all these and we went to play this one and LP was on it. And I was super excited to see Chester and everything. And what do you know, there's like 30,000 people there and we were, you know, high up on the list. We're a big band. We do our thing, but Linkin Park was like third from the top. And Chester runs from the other side of his, you know, side of the fucking dressing room to our dressing room because they didn't really drink a lot and we did. So if you wanted to party, you come to Orgy's fucking area because we had more liquor than the liquor fucking stand. And so he came and we're pouring drinks and he's like, dude, he's like, you're right. You know, we're fucking, you know, we're above you guys on the list. I'm like, dude, I told you, like you guys are going to crush it. We ended up hanging out all night, you know, me, the Linkin Park guys and everything, and just being friends. And it was a beautiful time. And through that, I ended up, when we were home, he bought a house that was I live here in Long Beach, California. He bought a house in Palos Verdes. And I would go up to parties at his house. He would come to parties at mine. And at his house, the parties would always kind of end. And it would always be me and him with two guitars playing. And he would play these songs that weren't really necessarily Linkin Park songs. And he thought nothing would happen with them. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. These are great songs. Like, why wouldn't you just record them? And he's like, well, you know, I'm so busy with Linkin Park. You know, how would I do that? So I called Amir, my bandmate, who lives one street over in a true LA fashion. And yes, we drive cars to each other's house.
He still lives a street over from you?
He lives one street. We bought houses in the same neighborhood. That's remember Steve Martin in LA story where he goes to his best friend's house. He goes, he goes to the next house and then he runs to the next house. And it's so LA. So we make fun of that all the time because we're always like, and then running up to the house and then running back in and grabbing something. So I grab Amir and I'm like, hey, dude, I go, Chester has some incredible songs. And I told him all about it. And Chester was hanging out here a lot. And then we came into this studio and he sat down right over here where I used to have this couch. And we put up a cheap SM7 mic, put it up there. And I go, hey, play that thing that you played for me at your house. It was Let Down. And he did this kind of like crappy version of, you know, and the tears fall like rain. And my face again, all the words you wouldn't say. And we're just kind of like, and I'm getting chills on my arm because when Chester sings, it makes you like, it sounds like the radio. And so I was just like, dude, this is insane. And we recorded it. And then Chester goes, yeah, man, he's also do whatever you want. You know, I don't really know what to do with it. And we're like, okay, fucking gauntlet thrown. So he goes home and we work on it all night. We did all the instrumentation. He came back. We had his scratch vocal over the entire fully fucking recorded song. And we played it for him. And he couldn't even make it through the whole song. He started screaming, jumping up and down. And he ran outside of the studio screaming, "We're a band. We're a fucking band, dude. This sounds like a band." And running through, just laughing, getting chills. My house is the pool's kind of in the middle of the house. And there's all these cool rooms. It's like an L. And they all lead to the pool. So you can run out a door, in a door, out my bedroom, you can do like figure double eights. He was running out and in and out and in and out and in of the house screaming. And he would run back in the studio. And he's like, "Oh my God." And he would run back out of the studio. He's like a little kid. And that's why you loved him so much, because this gift from God came out of his mouth on the reg, like all the time. And he would do things like in here, we record him and I don't have a vocal booth in here, but this is a real studio. We just happen to do vocals right here. I do them right.
That's awesome, man.
I do them right. You know, there's my mic. You know, so I sit right here and do them, or we sit up over here. Well, what that means is that when you're sitting with a guy like Chester, we're just sitting right here. You know, I'm literally just in the room. We just have to be quiet and listen and I can hear him do the vocal, and it makes your fucking skin crawl. And it was just such a cool experience. We ended up recording the whole Dead by Sunrise album while recording Julian K's first album. So Chester was instrumental in forcing me to be the lead singer and be the guy, not the guy that also sang in Orgy, but the guy that is the singer. He is the reason that I'm me.
I saw. Yeah, you've done. You put instruments in a couple bands, and singing. I mean, that's kind of cool. That's very multifaceted to be able to do that for like Julian K and Edema too. I mean, not a lot of guys can do that. I feel like, man, like, you say, not a lot of guys can go from like a guitar player to vocals or both or whatever. I mean, I think that's kind of interesting to me. I mean, I think, man, like, so a lot of guys just kind of stick with one thing, you know, and just kind of do. And there's nothing wrong with either. It's just interesting. Yeah. I feel like
it's challenging. I mean, you know, it's been 30 years I've been doing this, so. The allure of doing Edema was, you know, everyone knows me now as, you know, the eyeliner, painted nails, you know, the whole leather straps and the whole Sado kind of Julian K vibe of this whole dark fucking
thing. I didn't know you were in Edema until Sean told me.
Oh,
I didn't
know. Yeah.
I knew Edema separately than I knew Orgy or any of the other bands. He told me that I literally found out when you were touring with him.
Yeah.
You were the singer for Edema. And I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
I've always been such a big, Orgy fan. Like I was just like, and I heard, when I heard that, I'm just like, what? He sings for Edema now? I mean, I somehow never knew that till Sean told me.
Well, it wasn't, it's over now, but it was a relatively, you know, new thing. And, you know, those guys asked me to, you know, that band really, really went down to the bottom and really kind of, you know, it's a lot of really, really bad decisions and a lot of really bad situations. And they weren't really able to do, you know, what they wanted to do for years and years and years. And they asked me to come in and help. And I did. And the challenge for me was everyone knows me as this other thing. And you know, it was like, well, why don't I show them this other side? You know, why don't, and then when they heard the new singles, which all did really well, and they heard me screaming and doing all this stuff and owning that kind of new sound. Yeah. They people were like, what the fuck? And they stopped talking shit immediately. And that's just what I like. I guess I'm kind of addicted to it. You know, I'm kind of addicted.
No, you're a hell of a singer, man. Like, it definitely, like, I'm not saying it surprised me, but it kind of did because I just didn't know you as a singer. To be honest, I mean, I just did. I mean, when I, until I looked into, like, Julian, I knew vaguely about Julian K, I guess, you know, and I knew, like, I got into, like, when you're a kid, everything's magic. It's like sports, you know, like, all the athletes are magic, all the musicians are, and now I'm, like, old, and I'm like, where's a good place to eat? You know, that's kind of how my mind is now. But going back through the catalog and stuff, like, and it kind of got me excited, like, hearing that you were singing for Edema. It kind of had me going through the catalog a little bit, like, kind of just checking it out, because, I mean, just the little kid in me kind of came out when I heard that from Sean. He was telling me that he's like, I knew your name from, like you were just, like, you're probably on a poster in my room, dog. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm just, I'm just being real, bro. Like, I was like, a, remember being like middle school with like these posters, man. And like, yeah. And Sean's like, yeah, he mentioned you. He mentioned like you by your name. He's like, yeah, Ryan Shuck. I'm like the guy from Orgy? And he's like, oh, no, he's in Edema. I'm like, he's in Edema? I just didn't even like, it was just like a weird, there was like a weird moment I had where I was like, that's awesome. And I just like, just kind of like, as a music fan, you just want to learn everything about it, really. You know, you just want to absorb like what all these guys are working on and stuff. And
yeah,
I think it's cool. You can kind of play multiple roles. I mean, so do you write a lot of music too? I've never asked you that. Like, do you write a lot of the music?
Yeah. Yep.
That's amazing. Yeah. It looks like it by your background. It looks like it. Literally, you have all that stuff behind you. So I was assuming, but I was just like, what is your writing process like? If that's not a weird question, like.
No, it's not. I mean, it's evolved over the years. It used to involve a lot of, substances and drinking and just willpower and being able to get people together and create energy. And now, again, now that I'm sober, I mean, I'll always bring that up because it's a lot of difference in my life. You know what I mean?
Being sober is awesome. I'm sober too. I hate
that. Fuck. So it's wild. Cool to know, man. Yeah. And it's like, you still are the person that you were, right? You still have, except that the good parts you can accentuate more now, you know? And,
it really is like that. I never thought that. I always felt more creative stoned or whatever. I'm wearing an edibles hat. You know, I definitely was in the culture, you know, but now it's just like, no, you're right. It's like it's weird having a fast monologue again inside your head, you know, and just kind of being like, it made me antisocial. And I felt like, even to where I just like, where now I'm just talking to everybody again. Like, I love it, man. Like,
dude, it gets, you know, like for me, I used to make me social. And then, with all addictions, it starts to make you antisocial, you know, it always starts out. There's always something it's doing for you. That's good. Right. In the beginning, you're digging it. Right.
But yeah, you feel all creative and stuff. It's like that Case Choice song, man. Like that Case Choice song. I'm not an addict or whatever. Like you just feel all creative and like you're some kind of genius or something. And then you realize you're a genius prior to it, you know?
Yep. I mean, you know, it's funny. You know, I tell a lot of my friends this too now, and I'm like, a lot of my friends that still party and some who party way too much still. And I just go, when they talk to me about like, well, what made you stop? And I'm like, well, okay, a lot of things happen at once. COVID, you know, all my tours, like everything ended. My girlfriend left me, who's now the mother of my baby. So we're back together. Wow. You know, everything just kind of, the ass fell out from under me. But I also just kind of thought to myself, fuck, man, like, I'm going to be 50 in a couple of years. Like, do I still want to drink like this? Like, at what point do you start becoming pathetic? And you know, all of the stuff that everyone does, it's all progressive. So in other words, it starts out as one thing. And then over time, 100% of the time, it gets worse because all of it fucks your brain up. And there is actual science. All you got to do is listen to Huberman podcast or whatever, and it'll break down the science of cannabis, the science of alcohol. And by the way, they do similar things to your prefrontal cortex. Yeah. So they thin the gray matter in your prefrontal cortex. That's actually not that's not a good thing.
Yeah.
And cannabis has a surprising link to psychosis. And so there's a weird thing there. And then alcohol, the damage it does is irreversible, that it does to your prefrontal cortex. And I started finding myself, I'm normally a pretty sharp guy and pretty quick, and I was always like that. But I started getting to a point where I was having trouble recalling things and having trouble reacting quickly and having trouble at my worst, like just as COVID hit and my chick left and all. And I did what I always do. I start drinking because that's the way I knew how to cope with it. By the way, Chester's death had a massive amount to do with my going over the edge, because when Chester died, I really did not know where to go. And I remember sitting out by my pool so drunk and just crying for nights after night after night after night. And I was caught in this loop, and it almost makes me get a lump in my throat to say it. I was caught in this loop, in this cage in hell that I couldn't get out of. And my friend was gone and I couldn't, and I'm just going down the same fucking hole. And it was so brutal, and I could never pull out of it, because when you're an alcoholic and that's your way of coping, you will never pull out of it. You can't pull out of it.
Right.
And so part of going to rehab for me was largely dealing with Chester's death. That was, I mean, finally getting off the stuff. But, you know, when I started drinking, like when Caitlin left me and everything, COVID hit and everything ended and my new album had just come out, I'm like, fuck, and all my tours disappeared, and you know, probably $1 million loss in between all the businesses, no problem. And I'm sitting here like, fuck, I'm fucked, you know, I'm fucked, and my chick left, and I'm all I have is this bottle of wine. And I just started thinking, like, what the fuck, you know, everything's over now, right? You know, for indefinitely. And I'm like, so this is it. I'm like, I actually might have trouble calling new girls over here because COVID. I was stuck with myself.
Oh, man.
And myself was not very cool. And my dog didn't want to be around me, you know? And so I was like, my dog had to go home from rehab. Like, they allowed me to bring him up. And he's like, yeah, this is bullshit. I'm out of here. And I sent him home with the mirror. But I'm sitting here, and my fucking, this is how crazy I was. I thought, I'm sitting there, you know, out by my pool drinking and just thinking of like, what girls can I call over so that I can make myself feel better? You know, it's like, let's have a party. The party can never end now because no one has to work. Well, it all turned out to be a nightmare because no one wanted to be around each other. No one knew what to do. It was all fucked. And I was losing the ability. I had to play a couple songs and like record them here live and send them to festivals and stuff that we were going to play because they did everything like streaming then. And that was the only safe way to do it. And I couldn't, it took me 3 days to play one song acoustically. That's how fucking mushy I was turning into. And wow. So I was sitting out by the pool and my big plan was like, you know what? I'm not missing out on anything. I'm just going to go to rehab and I'm going to see what it's like. I'm going to see what it's like to not be on this shit. And I'm addicted to everything. Like, I just want to like fuck chicks and drink fucking liquor and fucking, you know, it's just a never ending fucking, it's a never ending fucking ride down the toilet. And somehow I made it look good for a long time. It's not like I fucking fucked up and, you know, did a DUI thing or whatever, nothing. Like, I was pretty successful drinker, which is dangerous.
That's even more dangerous.
Why quit? Why? I'm like, what? Fuck, why quit? You know, I got my bills are paid. Fuck you. I work fucking 19 hours a day, you know, suck it, you know, and drinking fucking at noon. And what a shitty way to be, you know? And in the meanwhile, you know, it's probably.
Isn't it weird seeing that after? Because at the time you think it's awesome, right? But after you're like, man, what am I doing with my life? What did I do with my life for like 20 years, you know, or whatever time frame, you know?
Yeah, I hit a moment where I was just like, well, I'm dead. I'm effectively dead. I'm a dead person. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go see what it's like. And if I hate it, I'm going to leave that fucking place. And I'm going to, or if I get out of there and I hate it, I'm going to buy the liquor store on the corner and I'm going to drink. Cause that's where I kept that place in business. I still go in there and I go, what are you guys doing? How do you pay the rent? And they're laughing. They're like, oh, you did a big part, a big chunk of the rent, you know? And I'm like, I come in, I buy like a fucking, you know, water, you know, and they're like, you know, they give it to me. They go, oh, you leave, Ryan. You know, I'm like, that's how much money I spent. And so I was like, I'll buy that fucking place. And I will drink all of the liquor and I'm going to blow my brains out into my pool. And I thought that that would look cool. Like for anyone who came home and saw it, I thought that was a cool look and a cool way to go. That's how sick I was.
Wow. Yeah.
That was like a dope plan. Like it was a full on, like,
dope plan. Yeah,
like that was my bitching solution for the.
Thank earth. God you didn't, brother. Like, that's crazy to think. I'm glad.
It's like, you know what? I'm going to go join my best friend. I'd rather be with him because this sucks.
That's got to be hard. Because you're not just seeing these guys as just people you see on TV. These are like your friends and peers and stuff. I mean, that's got
to. He was the worst because I couldn't even go to dinner. You know, like you couldn't, it was so public, you know, I mean, I can't imagine what Talinda and everyone has gone through in all of Linkin Park and all of us who were close, you know, I couldn't go to dinner at a normal place because someone that I knew or somebody that thought they knew me or whatever would feel uncomfortable. And then they'd get up and want to come over and talk to me and maybe make me feel better. What they don't realize is that it's that day in and day out, everywhere you go, you could be at the gas station. And it's just like, cause it's such a big deal. He is, you know, he affected, you know, 50 million people's lives. You know, that's the level of, so it's just such a big deal. But when I was in rehab, you know, we were going through all the stuff and I have other shit, of course, but I don't know. I have the little book. I don't know where it is. It's a book. Like this. This is one of my rehab books, but this one has.
Is that a Shinola journal?
Yeah, yeah.
My wife's huge on those. Yeah, she journals so much and document keeps and.
This one those music notes.
She's gonna flip out when I tell her you have a Shinola journal, bro. Like, she's gonna flip out.
Yeah. Oh yeah, dude, it's the best. It's the best. Yeah, I have all this fucking shit. Who knew that writing music would be like such a fucking nightmare? Like, it's all this technical shit, all this fucking technical fucking shit to make all this shit work.
Yeah.
My
wife's literally going to freak out when she hears that you have a Shinola journal, bro. So like all the bands you're in don't mean anything to her. You having a Shinola journal?
Oh, yeah.
That's, yeah. That's, yeah. That's, yeah. Like, yeah. Just, That's just how you want it over, man. That is sick. You write all your lyrics in there or something? Or what do you? What
no, I don't write lyrics, but these are actually technical notes. So this is like a lot of.
Calm that down for me. What are tech notes?
Oh, so technical notes would be like I'm trying to figure out like say this new keyboard. It's a complex keyboard. And so as we're trying to learn it and figure it out, I'm writing down all the stuff that we have to do and what different things do. And I know there's a manual, but sometimes you still have to kind of figure out what's going on, or you're trying to work on parts and you need to remember what part is what. And,
got you. That's cool, man.
It's a whole lot of like technical stuff, or the way that we organize our files and all that kind of stuff is honestly, dude, it's a band like ours is no different than being in a tech company or something. I mean, there's a lot of,
are you talking about Julian K?
Yeah. All of them. I mean, so what I basically am is I'm sort of like a singer, songwriter, producer that with my partner Amir, and together we've done all this different work, and we actually work with different artists. We have a label named called Framework, and we do all this work. I just happen to be the singer of these four bands that are on the screen. You know what I mean? So that just happens to be the things that we've kind of largely, you know, produced and acted in, if you will. And, but really, I mean, all the stuff that we do and work on in here, all the artists that we work on, you know, we write or co-write and we produce. And we, at this point too, like I in the label side, you know, I manage marketing and, basically all the stuff that makes these crazy things work in this modern age. You know, I like the crowdfunding campaign that we just dropped. We made, you know, $25,000 in one day, you know, on our Indiegogo campaign that we just dropped.
Yeah, I saw that. Congrats on that, bro. Thank you. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's a record. I mean, and we're number one on Indiegogo. It's the sixth time that we've been number one. So we've raised a couple hundred grand on crowdfunding. We're one of the biggest crowdfunding bands in the world. So we get record label money directly from our fans. And that's how we do what we do. That's like the seed money for the albums and stuff like that. But the question has always been from all these managers now that I used to work with and these bands that I used to, you know, play with and stuff. And in my bigger days, is, well, how the fuck are you doing this? Like what happened? Like one day you guys just blinked and you have this thing out in this video and all this shit, and there's all these people are getting excited and you guys raised 25 grand in a day and it keeps going.
Amazing,
for
bro.
30 days. And we're like, yeah, well, there's a method to the madness. You know, when what people don't see is we're constantly watering the garden. When we don't have a big event happening or a big thing happening, why do people give a fuck about you? It's because on the DL, we're doing the right stuff all the time. It can be from, for a while, we had this weird reputation of like, we were faster than Amazon. So when people ordered products from us, we would fucking, you know, they would get it like the next day or the day after. And so this big joke would happen. Like, dude, Julian K is like, they're better than Amazon. These guys are like fucking insane. So our web sales were really good. Like the business is really good. We have a Patreon that we have direct with our fans. We make thousands of dollars a month from that. Just there's no product cost involved. And it's all interactive, like event style stuff. It's almost like private podcasts. You know what I mean? Like we're doing it directly with our fans. And we've been doing this kind of shit either for free or for money for years. We never stopped. And so we have this like fucking hyper energized, super fucking cool fan base that I would almost just say really are our friends, you know? And we exercise that. Have you ever heard the 1,000 fan essay?
I am not familiar with that, actually, no.
Fucking magnificent. Anyone that's in creative should definitely check that out. And it's about...
What's that called again?
It's called 1,000 fans, I think. It's 1,000 true fans. I think that's what it's called. So we have, I jokingly say, we have 638 true fans. So now I've sold, I have over on this wall.
Millions of records, yes.
You're right. I have millions of record sales, but I don't have any of those people's phone numbers, credit card numbers, their trust, I don't know who they are, but I do have 638 people who will spend $200 a year on the band.
Wow. That's a smart way to break that down. I love your mind on this, man. That's a great business mindset.
You can see if you had 1,000 people that would spend $200 a year on your band, that's a $200,000 base. That's your, like your base operating budget would be 200 grand a year. Now, wow, on top of that, you have touring, you have royalties, you have Patreon, you have crowdfunding, you have all this kind of stuff. But what you want to do is, we have this, if you notice that I'm not being all big shot guy and saying it's 10,000 people or whatever, I'm not, I'm saying it's under fucking 1,000 people that this little indie band called Julian K, which is the guys from Orgy. And by the way, when you start an indie band and you're not called Orgy, no one gives a fuck.
So no one start cares. Over. Yeah.
You have to go out there and fucking and make it happen. You know what I mean? You gotta, you know, no, in fact, I would even say that some people are like, oh, these guys think they're cool. These guys from Orgy, fuck them. Well, you have to actually go out there and be good, interact with people. You have to do memorable shows. You have to do things that people don't expect. You have to have great songs, and no one helps you, and everyone thinks you're stupid. And you go out there and you make it work. And so we basically have, so what would be our yearly like base budget would be, say, $168,000 for, you know, an indie band with three people in it. Well, that is enough, surprise, to run operations. And then we tour. We have royalties because we actually, our music actually does well. We do Patreon, we have merch sales, we do VIP at shows. You add it all up and you have like an actual business, and it's indie. No one fucking controls us. We don't have any record labels involved except for our own. We handle essentially everything. We have some crew and people that work for us, and we have partners and stuff that we work with creatively. You know, the videos and stuff that we do look the way they do because we've developed relationships, right? And you know, we pay for them, of course, but we work hand in hand with a creative group that has become my label Framework. And so, you know, it's just an interesting thing. You know, you can really do incredible stuff independently now. And I have so many big shots asking us how it is we're doing this. Like, how are you doing this? You guys are putting out insane albums that are real, really produced, really well done. You guys got singles that are scoring, you know, they're up there with the plays that with like big bands on labels. You guys are touring the world, doing all this stuff, but there's no label. There's no, we just don't even know where it's coming from. And they just don't understand this direct to fan relationship that we have. And I saw a question that popped up talking about Dark Mode. Yeah. Dark Mode is the latest campaign. And speaking of hopefully talk about Dark Mode, that was probably just a little bit of a mistype, but I'm talking about the latest album, Dark Mode. And that is something that we just spring on people out of nowhere, but we've been watering the garden. That's why there's flowers there. That's why there's green and support and love. When we drop something exciting like this, people fucking react and they vote with their wallets.
Dude, I was literally like, I'm barely impressed, bro. And I was super impressed when I saw the reaction to that. I barely know you, and I was just excited for you, man. I saw that. I'm just like, dude, I love seeing people win, man. And I love seeing people just like actually do their dreams and not talk about it, man. I thought that was so cool, bro. I'm like, man, you got so many people behind you that just believe in what you're doing, and that's just magic, dude.
It's funny because it's really based in being humble. You know, notice that, you know, when I'm talking, like, I'm not saying millions, you know, I'm saying real numbers. I'm saying like achievable numbers of fans. So for podcasters, for bands, for everything, they look, a lot of people will see me sometimes and be like, you know, oh, you know, yeah, he thinks he's looking badass or whatever. It's like, actually, no, I so don't think I'm badass. I approach it all like I'm completely a learner. I approach it all like I'm the lucky person to have this fan who would even fucking spend $20 on my whatever it is, you know. And if you and I'm trying to only get under 1,000 fans. Are you kidding me? How little am I? How little? I know that there are more than 1,000 people that like my music. I know that. I can see this record over there. I understand what the number. I understand what 1 million is, and I see more than one of them over there. I get that, but you know, like I said, I can't spend that. I can't call them, you know, on the phone. I can't, those people won't show up for my little private podcast thing that I do, but there is a fucking good handful of motivated people that will. And we focus on them. And by doing that, the stuff that goes out to the masses is fucking awesome because we're focusing on the true believers, you know?
Yeah, that's just amazing, man. I like how you unmuddied the waters, if that's a term, you know, you can kind of just like let them see behind the smoke and mirrors a little bit. I think it's very achievable for, I mean, everybody's dream is achievable. I mean, and I think that you kind of gave a little advice for people that have dreams and kind of kind of do that too. I probably have about two more questions. I don't want to take all your time. You're probably way busier than I am. So feel free to not answer, but someone was asking why you're not an edema now, basically, because why is Ryan no longer an edema? I'm also interested in that. If you can pass.
I try to see if I can answer it without throwing anyone directly under the bus. You know, the band had a lot of problems before I joined. You know, and I was friends with those guys for 30 years. So, you know, when you know that your friends have a lot of issues, but you still love them and you're not like, you know, married to them. So you don't have to like deal with it every day. Right. And you just love them and want to support them and so on and so forth. So when they asked me to come in and help, I was interested because I liked the music. And I did have time because, in Julian K, I only do about 60 plus shows a year. You know, I don't,
lot, bro.
I don't play 120, you know, so I have a lot of energy. So I was down to do it and I wanted to help my friends. But what I discovered, unfortunately, is that the, you know, there's a dysfunction in the band that, you know, it was basically not, it existed before me, you know, the band, like the feud that exists in that band. Has been going on for many, many years and through many singers. And there's a reason that the problems exist. And I just kind of, unfortunately, kind of ran headfirst in it or into it and tried to kind of really lead. And I think I succeeded in helping get that business back up and running again. And, you know, last year I played 100 shows with the band. But unfortunately, every tour I went on, there's a massive, you know, band fight, you know, not necessarily involving me. And I eventually had to pump the brakes and say, guys, you know, it's been 4 years and I don't have an album. We need an album. The songs that we recorded did really well. We really need an album. And that's not going to happen if we're out on tour 100 days a year. And in addition, you know, if this kind of toxic environment can't end, you know, I can't agree to do 100 shows plus a year. I'm down to play 100 shows or more. I'm totally cool with it. You know, I love doing it. I love the music and consider the guys my good friends. But I think what their decision was that, you know, they weren't ever going to change. And this is just the way it's going to be. And if I'm not happy with that, then, you know, we probably shouldn't be doing it together. So I was like, okay, wow, that's a different tune than when I joined, when you guys asked me to come in here and fix this thing. So, okay. I hope you made the right decision. Bye-bye. That's
do you think it helps you if you're being sober too, not dealing with other people's bullshit as much?
This stuff I wouldn't have dealt with even if I was.
I was just wondering, okay. I didn't know.
Yeah, this stuff is you know, just the you know, insane fighting and stuff I don't do. Yeah.
You know, I hope they figured out, man. It's a good band. You guys are like, you got a really talented band there. So it's like, I hope they figured out stuff. I just wanted to ask. It was like one of the fans was asking that. And I think
that's a common question.
So if you watch, people
are asking, and I've tried not to say anything.
You handled it well. You handled like a politician.
Say stuff that I think people already know because I've read the comments, you know, and I think they know that there's something going on in there. So I don't want to say anyone's name or anything like that. I'm not.
And your friends. Yeah. No, you just want to be upfront with the fans and still back your boys.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not even trying to back them. You know, I actually don't really think it's a very friendly move. I think it's probably not smart. And we'll see where things go.
I was trying to help you out, bro.
Yeah. No.
I'm just joking.
Yeah. And I'm just trying to be like really clear. You know,
I appreciate that.
I get these questions a lot, like, especially when this happened, like everyone asked, I didn't say anything. And I'm not going to say a lot of detail, but yeah, it's a toxic environment, you know, and I don't really want to be in that environment. You know, I don't want to be in an abusive, crazy, toxic world, you know, but I certainly didn't have any plans on quitting or anything. I just wasn't going to agree to, you know, go hard with a, you know, never ending fight happening around me. You know what I mean? You know, it's so much easier to, you know, I make a lot more money doing Julian K. I, you know, like I said, we actually get along really well. It's really fun.
Well, you say he's one of your best friends. That sounds like way more fun. Before we get on, throw some positive.
It's a net positive for me.
Yeah. So you guys doing show, like throw some shows out or any kind of promo you want here before we get out of
here. So we have a tour. There's an amazing band from Sweden called Priest that we are doing this kind of a short run that we put together. This is kind of like our tour. It's called the Neon Chronicles. It's on the West Coast right now, but the requests from the East are huge. So we're going to probably add them on. The Priest guys are actually, they won't maybe tell you this, but I'll tell you, they're the original guys from Ghost. The
band. Oh, wow.
So they're fucking dope. And this is like an electronic project. No one knows what they look like. They wear masks and everything, but fucking awesome. And I fell in love with them years ago when I heard their music. I didn't even know what they looked like or how cool they were. And I just fell in love with them. And I have this weird thing about me that I'm realizing that it's a thing. I'll hear a band on Spotify and just be like, oh, I really like this band. I'll start talking about them. And somehow fucking magic tentacles come out and I connect with a band from a fucking other country who's not played here in America yet, you know, as Priest. And I end up putting this thing together and we've become incredible friends. They're fucking awesome. I'm a massive fan. And this is going to be their first kind of like, you know, serious run where they're carrying the bill. And they're definitely hot. People love them. There's something going on and we're thrilled to be doing this with them. And then we're going to be out with our good friends September Morning. Are going to be opening up the tour and they're fucking awesome. Heavy band with a girl singer. I actually love that.
That's badass.
Yeah. And super cool. So we're going to be doing that. We're going to be leaving in 2 weeks. And then this Friday I play in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm actually celebrating nu metal. I did this in New York just before COVID. We did a thing called Nu Night and I went and DJ'd. So what you can't see here is I had to set up a full DJ rig and teach myself how to DJ because I don't know how to DJ. But I said, hey, I'm only going to do this if I really come DJ. I'm going to do it for real. Like I'm really going to mix the music and do the effects and do the thing or else I'm not doing it. I'm not just going to come on with a memory stick and put it in, which is what people do now. And you're like, okay. So I went there and I did this mix of music that was basically based off of my life. So what, you know, I'm going to put, you know, I'm lucky enough to be a co-writer of Blind by Korn. You know what I mean? And like
that. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
So I throw that in, you know, wow. And what makes it, I think, more special is because a lot of the music is actually me or people that I'm kind of directly related to. People fucking went off and I sold it out. It was a small place, Arlene's Grocery. It holds like 100 something. But
oh, that's in New York, right?
Yeah, it's fucking rad. And I sold it out. And so we were so stoked on it. We were going to do more, but then COVID hit. So my partners that did Nu Night in New York moved to Nashville and they're like, let's do it in Nashville. Well, my fear is that I'm not that popular in Nashville. So I have a lot of friends, but I'm not like, you know, when I check all the things I look at to see how cool I am, you know, like, and when we're booking shows, Nashville is where I have the least amount of fans on Spotify, bands in town. Wow. Song kick, all that kind of stuff. It's okay. It's just, you're not fucking rad everywhere. So I was kind of like apprehensive, but we're going to do it at this small rock club called Cobra. I'm going to do it with a new guy named Elijah, who's a new metal guy. And he's popping, he's popular. And so we're going to do it together. And a guy named Jocko, who's a Nashville native and my partners, and hopefully I can get some of my rock star friends to come out, and we're going to try and make this one more of like an industry night and hang out because everyone's moved to Nashville, like the whole fucking music business from Hollywood and New York, they all moved to Nashville. There's a little secret. It's half of fucking every band you love, from Papa Roach to Korn to fucking Lit to fucking all the rad people that we dig. They all live in Nashville now. I've even considered doing it. Cause if I sold this place, I'd probably have a lot of money. I could go there and just be like, fucking yeah, I'm retired. But anyways, I'm going to go play this Friday at the Cobra in Nashville. And I would love it if, anyone would come. And yeah, I am going to play, the radio cover I did, dude. We covered, we got express permission from Rammstein to do a cover of Radio.
Wow.
And so those guys are really good friends of mine. And Till is a very close friend of mine.
Makes a lot of sense. That's the only band I could think of that sounds like your kind of style almost. Yeah. That did well.
We became like this. And you can tell by the video, by the Family Value like home video.
Oh, that's right. Okay. I forgot about that.
We were Viking Toxic Avenger Warriors. And I mean, we destroyed on that tour like no one's business. We played that tour and instead of coming home with money, we had a bill from the destruction and largely led by Till and I. And it was nuclear. And we have been friends for 26 years and very, very good friends. So the requirement was you have to sing it in German.
Oh, okay.
These motherfuckers. So I sang the song in German and we fucking crushed it. And the single's out and it's awesome. It's radio.
That's out now? I haven't heard that. That's out?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dude, it's rad, man. You got to hear it. So I sang the whole fucking thing in German. I came in here
for that's kind of impressive, actually.
Days and learned German for the song. And I actually brought in one of our Amir's significant other, Marissa, who also worked on our latest video with us. So she's super creative, too. We're surrounded by awesome. She came in. She speaks. She's Japanese, but she speaks Japanese, English, and German. She can translate legal documents in German from Japanese to German. So that's how like linguistically oriented she is. So I had her come in and we broke it all down and I had to learn all of the fucking syntax and the strange pronunciations and then sing it. And then I had to double it and triple it because when you do a vocal, you have to do the harmony and you have to double it. And you have to, so I had to do it all, not just once, but I had to sing it again. And then again, exactly in German, it's bananas. And I fucking crushed it. So people are just like going like, this guy isn't a native German speaker. That's like what I got back. This is insane. So. Pretty dude, cool. Awesome. Now I know all this German, so it's pretty funny.
That's awesome. And I'll have to check that out, man. Yeah, I feel like I talked to you for 9 more hours, but I feel like you got more to do.
Good.
You got some more stuff to do, bro. Thanks, man. I'd love to have you on again, man. Then
touch
you. We touched a little bit of that career, bro. Like I appreciate you coming on here, man. Like
I love your show, man. So thanks for having me, and thanks for having me last time. It's super fun, and you're awesome, and I hope we can do it again.
Yeah, man, you're an absolute legend. Yeah, no.
Where are you based?
Do what?
Where are you based?
I'm in St. Louis right now. Usually I'm touring, but I just haven't been touring in a while. I got too exhausted, bro. I just want to sit around, you know.
Dude, I hear that, man.
If you're ever in St. Louis, hit me up, man. Sean's in town right now recording his last album for Smile Empty Soul.
Right. I talked to Sean just like 2 weeks ago. He's fucking – I love Sean. I love Smile Empty Soul.
I say lunch with him today. He's in town right now. I told him you're on the show. I was like, Ryan's in the show tonight, man. Like, awesome. That's crazy.
I love him and all that good stuff, man. That's great.
Yeah, I think he's gonna give me a tattoo tomorrow. He just started tattooing, so I think he's gonna. I'll probably talk to him tomorrow.
And on our tour together, we were talking about all this shit.
Yeah, so yeah. Cool. Well, if you're watching this at home, I mean, Ron was on the Rockstar Ghost Stories. You're gonna watch that episode. Obviously, check out any of his music and join K, Dima, Dead by Sunrise, Orgy. Thanks for spending your Wednesday night watching this. I know. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world and hundreds of people on Rumble and like across platform, about 1,000 or so watch this live. And I appreciate you taking the time to watch this and the many more that will watch this after. I mean, thank you, Ryan. I appreciate you going backwards in your career to be here. And
this is really fun. Thank you, brother. And thank you for watching and supporting the show. Super cool.
I appreciate it, bro. You have a good night, man. And thank you all for watching this. And I hope all your dreams come true. Watch this at home too. And you'll be a rock star, a comedian too. Just do the work, you know?
So, yeah.
Thank you all, and have a good night, brother.
Take care, my friend.
Well.